Good Monday morning to you. This is Jump in Tucson, and I am your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley. Jump in Tucson's Monday theme is Wonder, where we celebrate the good things going on at the University of Arizona, including student projects, student learning, student outcomes, as well as top-level performances by artists and athletes, and especially top-tier research going on with faculty and scientists at the University of Arizona. Our guest this morning is Vignesh Subbian. He is an associate professor of systems and industrial engineering and 10 other appointments that he has listed here. We won't go through them all, but he is a very, very high-demand professor at the University of Arizona and a member of the graduate faculty. Good morning.
Good morning, Ed. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here, and we're going to talk a little bit about a grant for engineering students in Yuma and Tucson. But before we do that, let's just talk a little bit about Dr. Subbian and what your educational journey was and what brought you to the University of Arizona.
Sure. My journey has been quite non-traditional, but interesting, I would say. So I'm a computer and biomedical engineer by training. I went to the University of Cincinnati in Ohio, and for a long time I was working with tools and systems that I thought didn't have much to do with people and had less interaction with people or impacted humans. So I wanted something that's much more closer to humans and human health. So I was mentored by a village of people back in Cincinnati, and they kind of molded me into a researcher and a person who could work effectively in the U.S. healthcare system. So almost a decade ago, I got an email around Thanksgiving that there is an open faculty position at the University of Arizona, and they're looking for somebody who is an interdisciplinary biomedical engineer who could bring in theories and methods from different disciplines to solve problems in healthcare and medicine. And I thought, that's cool. That's something that I wanted to do, and I applied. And a few months later, they invited me to visit Tucson. It was beautiful here in March. Spent a day and a half on the south of Speedway on the main campus of Tucson, and spent another day and a half on the north side of Speedway in the health sciences campus. Loved the people, loved the campus, and they graciously extended an offer, and I'm thrilled to join the University of Arizona. The rest is history.
Well, you have 9 appointments listed here. You said one more is on the way, so you have a total of 10 appointments at the University of Arizona. That's a pretty impressive list, a long list of credentials. What is your research and academic focus now that you're in place and your interdisciplinary is taking you in a lot of different directions? But what's your main research and focus?
Sure. So day in and day out, we study how clinicians make decisions, and we build tools to help them make better and safer decisions. We study those tools. Are those tools helping them make better decisions for their patients? So we work on problems from brain injury to COVID and today long COVID. So I'd like to think we work at the nexus of engineering, medicine, and health technology, or in other words, people, technology, and engineering. So all of those appointments, it's U of A's way of saying that you have all of the resources to work across boundaries. So right. I work very closely with clinicians. So I have an appointment in medicine. I'm also a part of the unit called Bio5 Institute that brings people and students from different backgrounds and expertise to solve complex problems in biosciences. So I have an appointment with the Bio5 Institute. So it's just U of A's way of giving the infrastructure to do interdisciplinary research.
Right. So you teach or work with engineering students, and they often begin their studies with a little bit more knowledge than what they may perhaps realize that they have. So as a student comes to the U of A and chooses engineering as their major, what types of experience and knowledges do they have as they come into the programs?
Oh, gosh, a wealth of experience, Ed. So we have been meeting with all of the new students who've joined the University of Arizona in the last 2 months in fall. And we have students who've been involved with the community and nonprofit organizations. One of them is working to improve access to healthy food. There's another student who owns their own business. They're making things to promote positive messaging. We have several people who come from multi-generation families. And And they do everything around their household, from gardening to cooking to plumbing. They design and fix everything in their household. And that's engineering.
Right.
And they just don't know that that's relevant to what they're going to be doing in their college and in the rest of their careers. Some of them speak multiple languages. They can seamlessly walk multiple cultures. And those are strengths for engineering. We also have some students who come from schools and family environments that could be quite challenging. And what that gives them is the resilience to overcome barriers and hardships. So now all they have to do at the end of the day is to know, first identify that they have those strengths, and they have to channel it for the right problem at the right time. And that's what we want to do with these students as they start their college.
So many times they think that they don't see themselves as engineers, but they've been solving problems. And that's what engineers do, is solve problems, come up with ways to solve problems. So they are developing good engineering protocol before they even step foot on the U of A campus. That's great. Well, when we come back after the break, we're going to talk about the University of Arizona just received a $2.5 million grant from the National Science Foundation. With that, the university started eCaminos, a scholarship program. And when we talk about that, so part of what happens at the University of Arizona, specifically with your appointments and so forth, there's a lot of money that comes to the University of Arizona each year in a variety of departments across the entire campus, which is federal grant money or private grant money that comes in to help with research. And this is an important part of what academic institutions do, is to receive this grant money and manage it and come up with some outcomes, correct?
Exactly, and to serve the community around us.
And so we're called a Research One University. And what does that distinction mean when they say, well, the University of Arizona is a Research One institution? What does that kind of mean in the level of research that's being done?
It's just to say that research is a huge part of the mission, and there's very high research activity in all of the disciplines. We are also a comprehensive university. You have sciences, engineering, law, humanities, and you've met so many guests on this show that come from different walks of disciplines and research. So it's just saying that research is a core part of the mission along with education.
And as a land-grant university, we serve the entire state, and we're, you know, the designated land-grant university in the state. And so this eCaminos program that we're going to talk about after the break involves the Yuma campus, the engineering students there, but also the main campus where you work in that whole process. And so serving student populations across the state is really important for the engineering college, but also all the other disciplines that are on the U of A campus.
That's right, yes. Yeah.
Okay, we'll come back after the break and talk about this grant that has come in and what eCaminos mean and what that means for scholarship at the University of Arizona. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice. We'll be back after the break to talk more with Dr. Vinyas Subbiyan about engineering students at the University of Arizona. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is the Monday Wonder Edition, where we talk about the good things going on at the University of Arizona. Our guest this segment is Dr. Vinyas Subbiyan, who is a professor of systems and industrial engineering, among many other appointments at the University of Arizona. Welcome back.
Thank you.
So the university got a $2.5 million grant from the National Science Foundation, and the university started eCaminos, a scholarship program. Can you describe a little bit about that that program with the Yuma campus and the main campus and the Hispanic students that are being served?
Absolutely. So eCaminos stands for Engineering Pathways. So this is a program funded by the National Science Foundation. And there's really two goals here: to provide scholarships for people who are financially disadvantaged and to help them pursue an engineering career. And the second is to figure out what practices would help them be successful in engineering and engineering careers. So this program has been around for more than two decades at the National Science Foundation. It's congressionally supported, and it's to cultivate domestic talent, specifically in sciences and engineering. And we are very fortunate to receive this grant from the National Science Foundation to support students at the University of Arizona, both in the main campus in Tucson. And we have a satellite campus in the Yuma County. And we are going to be recruiting students who come from financially disadvantaged backgrounds. And that's a requirement by the Congress and by the National Science Foundation. And help them achieve their aspirations as engineers, and we provide scholarship, mentorship, internships, and hopefully placements in engineering careers at the end of 4 years.
That's great. And many of these students are first-time college goers in their families, and mm-hmm. so this is a big deal. And they can get up to $15,000 a year for the 4 years that they're in school. That's a pretty big deal for these Hispanic students who are first-generation students at the university. That's great. How will researchers and faculty track the success of this program? And as Dr. Suresh Garamela, our brand new president, said, he's an engineer by training, and he sees this as a great opportunity. How will you and your team and faculty researchers track the success of the eCaminos program?
Mm-hmm. So on one end, we are looking at, are we serving the students we are supposed to be serving? So this is not just students from one particular background. So the only requirement is they have financial need. So that's on one end, we're recruiting them and helping them be a part of the engineering program. And once they complete their engineering program, on the other end, we have businesses and corporations and research communities that are looking for engineers. So making sure that we are serving the needs of the businesses and corporations in the region is another metric that we are going to be tracking. And as I said, there's also a research component here in the sense, are the practices and the support systems that we're giving to students, is that helping them be successful in engineering? So we're going to be tracking that over time. We're going to be meeting with them almost every month to see what support systems that they need to be successful in engineering.
Great. Our guest is Dr. Vignesh Subbiah, who is a professor of systems and industrial engineering, a member of the Bio5 Institute, and one of the people who's instrumental in getting the eCaminos project funded by the National Science Foundation. So one of the things that the students in this group will be doing is developing some portfolios that they will compile over their time as university students. And what does this mean, and how will that eCaminos project give them the opportunity to show what they've been doing over the years?
Sure. So we talked about how they already have a lot of experiences, and they're going to have a lot of experiences as a part of their engineering program. They're going to be part of the community doing design projects every year. So putting all of that together and to find their spark or find the wonder, as you would put it in your show, is the goal of the portfolios. So we're going to start with just looking back on what are those experiences and abilities that they bring to the table, and what are the things that they're going to be doing for the 4 or 5 years as a part of their engineering program. And these portfolios are a way to communicate their abilities, communicate their strengths, and help them identify this is who they are as engineers, connect the dots. That's often hard to do if you do not have something physical, tangible to do, and that's what these portfolios will do.
You know, the students over in the College of Fine Arts, they'll, for instance, if you're a graphic designer, you develop a portfolio of different designs and work that you've done over the course, your art and so forth, that's developed into a portfolio. If you're, say, for instance, a performer, you might be in some plays and stuff, so you'll show programs and the things that you've been involved in and the work that you've done. So this is a similar idea, to get together a compilation of what you've learned and what you've produced during your time at and that includes the internships and the externships that you've been talking about, which are really important to this broad scope learning that they're trying to understand and get.
Exactly. So it's very similar to the portfolios you mentioned in other disciplines. The key innovation here is we want to do it over time, and mm-hmm. also give them the opportunity to reflect on how the portfolios and how they are evolving as individuals and engineers. And looking at it over time, over 4 years, we hope that would help them strengthen or bolster their identity as engineers and help them succeed.
And this will be good for faculty too, because they can kind of see the development and see what their instructional capabilities are and how they're helping these young people grow within the engineering discipline. You know, a lot of these students will be working in the future in agriculture and environmental and climate condition space. How does being that kind of an engineer help the world?
Well, I'll start with Arizona. I mean, we have such a booming economy, technology economy here. I mean, we have a rapidly growing semiconductor industry, manufacturing, security and defense. We are known for renewable energy in the Southwest and in Arizona. agriculture, of course, both across the state and particularly in Yuma. And all of these domains require engineers. So I think this program would first serve our region and or the state of Arizona. And this trend is similar across the nation too. So we have a lot of funds and resources put into building the engineering workforce across the nation. So contributing engineering workforce is going to help us not just in our region, but across the country as well.
And so placement is really becomes an important thing after they complete their portfolio and they've gone through all the classes and eventually get their degree. They've completed some internships. They've been exposed to quite a lot of different things. Then you work really hard about placing them somewhere in the country or around the world, for that matter, where they can make a difference.
Right. And we are hoping that, that would be the easiest part. So when we were putting together this project and we talked to several industry community members, and they were very enthusiastic. We got a host of industry community members who wanted to be a part of this and recruit students, mentor students. So I think we're going to have this good problem of multiple options for our scholars that they could get placed, both in our region and across the country.
And as a Hispanic-serving institution, the University of Arizona is well noted for being one of the great Hispanic-serving institutions so designated by the Department of Education and other places as being an important part. This eCaminos, this engineering pathways degree then, or this scholarship program that gets them to their degree, really becomes an important mission of the land grant designation and serving the Hispanic population and giving them a chance to experience what it would be like to be an engineer in the future.
Right. I think you hit all of the identities of the UFA. I mean, we are public, we are research one, we are a land grant. We are a Hispanic-serving institution, and programs like eCaminos, it brings together all of these identities and mission of UFA together and see how it can help serve our communities, the families and students in those families who are aspiring to be engineers and scientists. And as I said, on the other end, serving the stakeholders and community partners and industry. So all of this, I think, intersects in a very beautiful way to serve the communities around us.
If someone wanted to find more information out about the eCaminos project and learn more about the NSF grant, $2.5 million grant that will extend this opportunity to 50 students, 26 from Yuma?
28 from Yuma.
And 22 from the main campus. Where could people go to find out more information about this project and how to support or get involved in something like this?
So the College of Engineering has this website for the program. The easy thing is all they have to do is apply to the UFA, and we will find them. We will find the students. And for our community partners, we have an inbox. It's ecaminos@arizona.edu. So if there are industry partners, nonprofit organizations, or anybody who would like to partner with us or recruit our students, they could just email the inbox and we would reach out and set up a meeting.
Or offer up an internship, which would be really helpful in the summer, but also during the regular semester. Mm-hmm. Well, very, very fascinating. What's in your future, Dr. Vinyasubian? Are you planning to stay at the UVA for a while? But what do you hope to accomplish research-wise and so forth in the coming years?
It's funny that you asked. This is something that somebody asked me just last evening. So I think my research is going really well. As I said, we are working on a range of clinical problems. For example, before 2020, we were working on respiratory disorders and how clinicians make decisions for respiratory disorders. And then 2020 happened, and the pandemic happened to be a condition that had a lot of connections to our respiratory system. So that has taken up a lot of my time and passion. So I'm also very committed to programs like eCaminos for at least the next 5 to 6 years. I have several other training programs to cultivate research talent in our region. So I'll be around for quite some more time.
We're really lucky to have you at the University of Arizona. Dr. Vinyasubian, Professor of Systems and Industrial Engineering and part of the eCaminos project at the University of Arizona. Thank you for being with us today. You're listening to KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk. This is the Wonder Series celebrating the good things at the University of Arizona. Thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you, Ed. Appreciate
it. Well, we're glad you're listening, and we hope that you will jump in Tucson. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Dr. Ed Ackerley, your host. This is the Wonder Series where we talk about the good things going on at the University of Arizona. Our guest this segment is Dr. Ghassan Mounemi.
Perfect.
Okay, I got it. We call him Gus. So welcome, Gus, and thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
So you're an associate professor of cellular and molecular medicine and cancer biology, and you are here today because we want to talk about something that's really important about some leading research that you've done in breast cancer mitigation research. But let's start first with your educational journey and what brought you to the University of Arizona.
Right. So originally, I'm from Beirut, Lebanon. And I did my undergrad at the American University of Beirut, and then I moved to New York to the Albert Einstein College of Medicine for my graduate work. And then after that, I did my postdoctoral training at Harvard Medical School in Boston. So it's very different from Tucson. And then I came here for my to establish my lab at the University of Arizona.
Right, and one of the areas of study at the College of Medicine is cancer, and in your case, breast cancer. How many Americans deal with cancer, specifically breast cancer, in a given year? It's a pretty big percentage, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I think it's about 2 million people probably who are diagnosed every year with cancer. I think for in the U.S.
Right.
alone, obviously. In terms of breast cancer, it's around 300,000 new diagnoses. Of course, the number of survivors
existing,
of cancer,
right.
So that's much higher, and that would be in the millions,
right.
Basically, for breast cancer.
So those that have recently been diagnosed, but that doesn't count all the people who have been diagnosed in the past,
right.
Who have had treatment and so forth. So. You and your colleagues invented a test at the University of Arizona called the MECO score, which is a diagnostic test that helps determine and potentially predict, perhaps, the likelihood of a relapse of those patients who have been diagnosed with early stage breast cancer. So just in a layman's term, what is the MECO score and what does that mean?
Right. So in my lab, we are interested in understanding how cancer cells respond to their mechanical microenvironment. And by that, I mean the cancer cells are surrounded by a lot of components that are non-cancerous. For instance, a protein network that holds the cells together. So we found that the mechanical properties, which means the rigidity, the stiffness of the tumor, plays a very important role in determining how this tumor will progress and predicting therapy to that. So one important thing is the MECO score is a genetics-based test, and it basically characterizes the response of the cancer cells to the matrix stiffness or to that mechanical properties of the tumor. I'm saying this because many tumors might be hard tumor, more rigid, stiff tumors, but not all of them will be mechanically responsive. So MECO stands for mechanical conditioning. So this is the MECO. Mm. And basically it qualifies if a cell is responsive to that kind of higher stiffness in their microenvironment.
And this was developed at the University of Arizona.
Correct. So this is more than 10 years in the making. So, and this is many different studies actually converged on this. And the way we do things is we work first with cancer cells in the lab where we culture them. We have different type of assays that we use. We look at their behavior. And we looked at their genetic profiling and how they are affected by matrix stiffness. So based on that, we developed this MECO score, which is a signature, and we developed an algorithm to calculate or compute the MECO score based on that information. And from that, we then used data sets from patients who had their tumors sequenced and their genetic profile published. And based on that, we then validated the MECO score in a large number of patients, which was more than 2,000 patients. And that's the first time we established the MECO score as what we call a prognostic biomarker. So it allows us to predict whether this tumor will have a poor prognosis for the patient in the future. And these are long-term studies.
Right.
So they're published. So that was, we were very fortunate to have that kind of data nationally and internationally available to us as researchers. The recent study it's taking this one step further. So it's actually testing whether the MECO score could predict whether those patients with high MECO score would respond to antifibrotic therapy. So now we're bringing in therapy to the equation. And what we show is that these patients with high MECO score, they have high risk of poor prognosis. They have high risk of relapse recurrence. And if they take antifibrotic therapy before their surgery, that risk is reduced very significantly. So it plays two parts then, the MECO score. One is a prognostic biomarker and the other is a what we call predictive biomarker for the antifibrotic therapy.
I know this sounds a little pedestrian to ask this question, but as I sit here listening to you talk about the complexity of what you've come up with and what you're studying and how you developed a MECO score, it just, you know, you just have to ask the question about scientists like you. How do you think about this stuff? How do you come up with this? How did you come up with the, you know, over those period of years that this is something that we could do that could help? How does that all kind of, as Einstein would say, does a bright light go on and say, this is what we're going to do and this is how we're going to do it?
I would say a lot of it is perseverance and a lot of it is luck.
Uh-huh.
And also, you have to ask the right questions in order to steer the project in a smart way, an efficient way. But in my lab, in particular for me, we focus a lot on microscopy and imaging. So we like to look at cells and study mm-hmm. their behavior. So it's literally like you're filming cells and manipulating them and treating them and doing things to them. And then you are looking how they behave.
Right.
We're very interested in how cells, in particular in the context of breast cancer metastasis, and how they become migratory. And this is very important for these very early invasion steps, or that conversion from a non-migratory, a contained tumor to a highly motile invasive tumor that will lead to what we call dissemination of cancer cells.
Neither is good, but the second one is worse than the first one.
It's very bad.
Yeah.
Yes.
And if those cells start going other places, then that could be doom for somebody. So
right.
this early detection with a MECO score then really becomes important because it helps catch it early. And,
right.
And the stiffness in the MECO score then is a predictor of what might happen. So
right.
Some treatment can happen.
And that's the thing. So it's if those scores are determined early on with early stage breast cancer, then this antifibrotic therapy would be preventing long-term relapse and metastasis that would occur down the line.
Great. When we come back after the break, we'll talk a little bit more about the MECO score and how you developed that and what that means for the future of breast cancer research at the University of Arizona College of Medicine and the Jenny Clements Center. And our guest this morning is Dr. Ghassan Mounimi. I got it right that time. And you're listening to Jump in Tucson, the Wonder Series, where we talk about the good things going on at the University of Arizona. In this case, how we can predict and treat breast cancer before it gets out of hand. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is the Monday Wonder Series, where we talk about the really cool things going on in science and research and technology and other great things at the University of Arizona. Our guest this morning is Dr. Ghassan Mounami, who is, we call him Gus, Dr. Gus. He is Associate Professor of Cellular and Molecular Biology, and Cancer Biology at the University of Arizona. So you and your colleagues developed the MECO score, and the patients who are in that study had antifibrotic therapy as well. And this reduced the cancer prognosis by 62%. That is pretty significant, right?
This is very significant. Actually, it's unprecedented in terms of the reduction of the long-term risk. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the recent therapies, they have been tested for a shorter interval or just as a how much there's residual cancer after surgery. But we have been lucky enough to have this group who are doing this study that lasted more than 10 years. So it's very hard to do a study that long.
Right.
And so when we started working with them, they were collecting all the data from the patients and look at relapse and follow up on the patients to see how they progressed over time. Okay. So what we have done is they had biopsies from those patients, mm-hmm. and these are the group in Madrid, the National Cancer Institute, the Spanish Cancer Institute. So what we have done is we collaborated with them. We got their biopsies from those patients, which are taken early on at diagnosis, and then we sequenced all those patients. And from that, we determined their MECO scores, and then we clustered those patients and qualified them as high versus low MECO score. And we found that the patients who qualified as high MECO score group, they responded very well to the antifibrotic therapy.
That's been fascinating. So this study was part of the research that comes out of the U of A College of Medicine in Tucson and the Jenny L. Clements Breast Cancer Research Institute at the U of A Cancer Center. What other type of research is going on in breast cancer and obviously other kinds of cancer? It's pretty robust at the University of Arizona, is it not?
It is. And we have multiple what we call areas of strength at the university. And we have different types of clinical and basic researchers working together. And this is so significant because we work in very close proximity to the clinicians to see what are the more important questions and how we could help as basic researchers. Jenny Clement, she has been so generous to the Cancer Center, and what she has been doing is transformative, really, especially for us working with breast cancer. I don't know if you know her. She's a great person. And
I know her well, yeah.
She is
a survivor.
A survivor, and she is a driver. She gets things done. Yeah. So right now we are in the process of expanding the breast cancer group, and we have recruited new faculty as well, and we are in the process of recruiting a director for the institute as well.
Cool. We're speaking with Dr. Ghassan Mounami, who is a researcher in the College of Medicine. So out of your research, when you developed, you and your colleague developed the MECO system and diagnostics, and a company was formed called MECO Diagnostics LLC, and it was helped to take it to market with Tech Launch Arizona. How does this kind of the research that you came up with and then taking it into the market and to help in the commercial market, how has that been beneficial, and how has that been able to spread the work that you're doing to a much broader audience?
So first, I would like to say that this journey started with one of my first students, who is Adam Watson, mm-hmm. and this has been his dissertation project, actually, in my lab. So when he graduated, he worked in industry for a bit, and then he focused then his entire time in on developing Miko Diagnostic as a company. Mm-hmm. We worked with TLA, and they have been so instrumental in terms of helping us in the initial stages to develop the company, but also they provide a lot of mentoring, and they still do that. Like, we're still in contact with them. They still help us with this. So in terms of the TechLaunch Arizona, they focus on commercializing that technology, which means we just got our patent approved recently. So our technology is under patent now. And so they help with that portion, but also they put us in contact with successful business people who are from that field, whatever field one person is working in. So they have a lot of contact. So these people were our mentors and TLA. They were very important and instrumental in developing the company and having the success that we have so far.
Great. Well, the FDA is going to approve this shortly, let's hope, and that'll help breast cancer patients across the country, around the world, with therapy to maybe mitigate some of that that terrible disease. We got to eradicate that at some point in our future, hopefully. And then there'll be a trial that'll take place at George Washington Cancer Center in Washington, D.C.
Right. So first, I want to say that the therapy, it's the antifibrotic therapy, which is using nintedanib, which is an antifibrotic. This is a very safe drug, and it has been approved. It's even off patent now for fibrosis in the lung. Mm-hmm. So we are repurposing the drug to use it for breast cancer. In terms of the where we are now in Miko Diagnostic, we're going into our seed round. So we're raising funds for performing this pivotal clinical trial that will be led by George Washington Cancer Center. So this trial, it is at George Washington, but actually the person who's leading the trial has been a researcher at the University of Arizona Cancer Center, and then she moved there. Her name is Pavni Chelasani, and she has been a long-term collaborator. So this is the connection. Yeah. And it will be a multi-center study that will involve the University of Arizona, of course. So so there's that connection, and Pavni is amazing, and she has been a very solid guide for us throughout the whole process.
You know, as a medical researcher and inventor, what satisfaction do you get out of developing therapies and technologies that help people in their medical situations?
So my very background is more in basic research, but there's so much, it's beyond even satisfying to see something that you're doing in the lab that is actually translated to real life, where you can see that it will affect directly patients. And not just on the emotional level, but also on the level of making it feels that it's worth it, basically.
Great. Well, thank you for the good work that you do in the research and coming up with the Miko score and helping people with breast cancer. We've been talking with Dr. Ghassan Munaimni, who is a researcher at the University of Arizona Cancer Center. If you'd like to be on Jump in Tucson, go to jumpintucson.com and let us know. Jump in Tucson broadcast from the Bustos Media Studios at KVOI 1030 AM Radio. Thank you for listening, and we're glad that you were with us this morning, Gus. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for listening to Jump in Tucson.